for argument is Juarez-Lopez v. Gonzalez. Mr. Petty.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, this is a petition for review from a denial of asylum by an immigration court and subsequent upholding of that decision by the Board of Immigration Appeals. Sonia Juarez-Lopez left Guatemala in 1990 to get away from a man named Rigoberto de la Peña, a man much older than she who had raped her repeatedly since she was 12 years old and had kept her essentially as a sexual slave throughout her adolescence. She came to the U.S. in that same year, 1990, with her two small boys and filed a barely literate application for asylum which had been filled out by a notary public. 15 years later, she had a hearing on that application before an immigration judge. I would note that she actually submitted three applications for relief, and her eldest son, Rigoberto, who had turned 21, had also filed his own application for asylum. But our petition for review today only deals with Sonia's asylum application, since actually the 8 U.S. Code 1252A2 prohibits judicial review of her other applications, so we're not questioning those. Sonia's argument before the immigration judge was that as a young woman in rural Guatemala, she was particularly vulnerable to sexual violence and persecution because it was then generally condoned, and fortunately still is, by Guatemalan society, including the police and governmental authorities. As such, she claimed membership in a particular social group, young rural Guatemalan women, and persecution on account of being one of that group by entities, including Mr. De La Peña, that the governmental authorities were both unable and unwilling to control. Unfortunately,
Does she have an alternative ground here, you know, having been here for 10 years and so on?
Well, the other applications for relief that we filed argued that she did.
Yeah, but so what's the status of that?
The one application is for cancellation of removal under Section 240A-B of the Immigration and Nationality Act, and that's...
Just answer me, Sam. There's this 10-year issue. Now, what's the status of that?
That appeal was denied by the board. The judge
what's
ruled...
What's the current status of it? Have you appealed that?
We appealed it to the board and it was denied, and we can't go any further with it.
It to the court, or is it unappealable, or what?
It's unappealable because the
that's out, right?
That's out.
That's completely out of the case.
Correct. And was another claim under the Nicaraguan and Central American Relief Act, but that's also out because it's not appealable.
So it's just the asylum.
Yes.
Okay.
We never really got to the legal argument on Sonia's asylum case because the immigration judge found her testimony to be not credible. Other than declaring her testimony vague, meager, and inconsistent, the judge noted six things that led him to conclude that Sonia was lying. First, he said that her 1990 asylum application stated that she had no children, which is correct.
Did he list this as six different points, or is this your...
This is my divination of
right,
what
okay.
came out of the
your
opinion.
Organization. Okay.
Sonia had testified that the notary public who filled out the application had done it for her, and she really didn't know what it said. It wasn't English. Second, he said her 1990 asylum application had said nothing about the rapes by De La Peña, which is true. The application, which is included in the record, really says nothing. It's an empty application that doesn't really state a claim at all. And Sonia did testify that the notary filled out the form in English, and she really didn't have any idea what it said. It didn't say anything. Third, the judge had said that despite Sonia's claim to having been raped by De La Peña, she willingly moved in with him at some point in their so-called relationship. But she had also testified that she didn't do that happily and had only done so because De La Peña had threatened to harm her parents if she didn't. Fourth, the judge found that because her oldest son was named Rigoberto, which is the same name as her persecutor, the judge assumed apparently that that was Sonia's choice to name him that and not De La Peña's choice, although there's really no evidence to support that assumption. Fifth, the judge read Sonia's declaration that was attached to the other form of relief, cancellation of removal, and found that it didn't contain all the details to which Sonia had testified. It did discuss the rapes over many years, but didn't contain some of the details that she had testified to. I would note that the purpose of that application was not to make a complete statement of her asylum case, but instead to demonstrate what hardship would befall her U.S. citizen children if she were deported. So it had a different purpose. Sixth, the judge stated that Sonia testified that when she became pregnant the first time at age 15, she went to live with her sister for a few years, while her declaration said she went home to her parents' house to have the baby. In fact, she testified that she did go home to have the baby and then moved to Petén to stay with her sister. And I'm still not sure what the relevance of that is to her ultimate credibility on the case. Because of these shortcomings, the judge wanted corroboration of some things that are not really amenable to corroboration. Overwhelmingly, he wanted proof that this was not a consensual relationship with Mr. De La Peña. I wonder whether any relationship between a 12 or 13-year-old girl and a man who is 16 or 17 years older than she can ever be consensual. But if it can be, how does she prove that it wasn't consensual? If Guatemala were a different kind of society, if it were like the U.S., she could have filed a complaint with the police or openly accused De La Peña of assaulting her, but that's precisely her point. Guatemala isn't that kind of society. Even her own parents shunned her at first, and far from supportive, and her own father dissuaded Sonia from going to the police because De La Peña was rich and powerful and could cause harm to the family. What the judge apparently believed, as is clear from his comments during Sonia's testimony, was that starting at age 12, she was the willing sexual partner of a man more than twice her age, and that her accusations of rape were fabricated. The problem is there's not one shred of evidence in the record to support such a conclusion. I think the case in that respect is very similar to the case described in Uwase versus Ashcroft from this circuit, 349 F3rd 1039 from 2003, which I think involves the same immigration judge, where this court held that the immigration judge gave too much weight to the lack of corroborating evidence, made unsupported assumptions about the credibility of the evidence, and relied on inconsistencies which were minor, not relevant to the claim, or could have been explained in many ways. The same is true here. We ask only that Sonia's case be remanded to the board for a new hearing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Petty. Ms. Benner-Leon?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Wendy Benner-Leon, and I'm here on behalf of the government. This is an immigration case where, after hearing the testimony and reviewing all the evidence, the immigration judge denied the petition for the application for asylum and withholding of removal because the petitioner was not credible. The substantial evidence standard of review applies in this case, and what that means is this court will uphold the decision unless the evidence is so compelling that no reasonable fact finder would.
Well, what I find particularly troublesome in the immigration judge's discussion, I'm looking at page 8 of his opinion. The court also notes that she named her son Rigoberto after Mr. De La Peña. Respondent testified Mr. De La Peña did not claim the children as his own, but then he forced the respondent to name one of the children after him. The court finds that to be unbelievable. Do you agree that's unbelievable?
I think it's highly probable in light of what the testimony was that the petitioner...
Wouldn't you have to know something about the culture of Guatemala in order to make that statement?
This isn't a case where the woman was married to the man or lived with him. She testified she was with him for 6 months, but he did not want to have anything to do with the children. She testified he did not want to recognize them as his own, and she testified that...
But suppose there's a practice in this culture that a man who fathers, you know, a child out of wedlock and so on, will not take any responsibility for the child and will not allow his name to be his last name to be the child's last name. But he will, in order to, assert his ownership or something of that sort, require that the child be given his first name. Are you familiar with that practice?
Well, I suppose that can occur even here. Yeah.
So why does the if that's correct, it could occur even here. Why does the immigration judge say it's unbelievable?
Well, the immigration, just because there might be other plausible explanations, does not compel the result that you have to conclude.
I don't understand that. You say correctly, from what I understand, that yeah, this is actually the kind of practice that. That it may well be a Guatemalan practice. If so, why would it be unbelievable?
Well, because it could also represent...
Don't these immigration judges have to have some familiarity with the culture of the countries from which these asylum applicants come? How else can they assess their credibility?
I believe we should assume they have...
What is the evidence that he knows anything about these strange foreign cultures?
Well, he's been an immigration judge.
Yeah, but we keep criticizing him for his what appears to be his willful ignorance of conditions in foreign countries. Now, you're aware of our criticisms of him, I'm sure.
I still believe in this case the record doesn't support her claims.
What contradicts her testimony?
One, she also
that he forced her to give one of the kids his first name, but refused to acknowledge any responsibility for the child. What is there to cast doubt on the truthfulness of that testimony?
In part, her testimony that he had...
Pardon?
In part, her testimony that he wanted nothing to do with the children.
But you're missing the point. It's entirely consistent to say, I don't want to have any, financial responsibility for this kid, but I want the world to know this is another of my countless offspring, my another Rigoberto.
She stated that he didn't recognize them as his children. And she didn't name the first child that supposedly was fathered by him also.
Yeah, but he doesn't discuss that. He thinks it's simply unbelievable that someone could want the child to have his first name but not want to take responsibility, have a sort of official acknowledgement of paternity which might have financial implications. That's what he considers unbelievable. And that's obviously imposing some kind of American middle-class norm on these Guatemalans.
We still have to look at the record as a whole. We have to look at the record as a whole.
Don't each of the immigration judges' credibility findings have, well, some of our cases say they have to have specific cogent reasons. Well, where's the specific cogent reason for this finding that she was unbelievable when she testified that he forced her to name the child Rigoberto?
Again, I believe the fact that she had previously testified he didn't want to recognize these children.
No, but you're going over the same. I thought you agreed that it was not beyond belief that you could have a man who wanted some identification with the child, hence the first name the same, but didn't want any, acknowledgement of paternity that might trigger financial obligations. You admitted that's not unbelievable.
I would agree if he wanted to have some identification with the child. But in this case, her testimony was that he did not want to recognize them as his children. I can provide you the page number.
Sure, but what does that mean? Recognizes, doesn't want, obviously doesn't want to have to support the child. That's one form of recognition. Another form of recognition is kind of, you know, I want the street to know how, you know, what a great producer of men I am, something of that sort.
It would have, the record would have to be so compelling for you, for the a reasonable.
He'd gone through this and he'd said yes, but you know, recognition. I think it's contradictory. Oh, but all he says, it's unbelievable. Because he obviously doesn't think it. He can't imagine a possibility of someone wanting to have the child bear his first name, but not wanting to be responsible. That's what he thinks is unbelievable, which, as I say, is very kind of, you know, it's provincial. It's assuming the whole world is just like the middle class United States.
According to this woman, this man wanted her to abort the children. The man did not want to have anything to do with them.
Precisely.
And she testified that they...
That's consistent with wanting the child to bear your first name. You don't have to have anything to do with the child. You just want to be understood as someone who has a lot of children out of wedlock, because that shows you're really, really macho.
This wasn't the only reason the immigration judge found the woman incredible. She also had inconsistencies between her testimony and the application. There was inconsistencies between the testimony and the declaration.
Well, the application was sketchy, and of course these, you know, we've said in previous cases, trivial inconsistencies don't undermine them.
This case involved a very material admission. She did not mention anything about allegedly being raped or physically abused by this man. And when she was asked for an explanation, she didn't say, I didn't understand. Her explanation was that she wasn't asked for details. This isn't a case where there was a lacking of details. It was a case where she never raised this charge in the application from the get-go. And she acknowledged that she was interviewed about it. When she was pressed again why she didn't mention it, then her story changed a little, and she started to say that, well, she told him about her life and what her life was all about and what occurred. Again, it was very vague and obtuse. So she was asked for the reasons.
Ms. Benner-Leon, the IJ here obviously is questioning credibility, but he relies in part, does he not, on what he believes to be inconsistencies between the 90-91 period and the 2002, I guess, when whatever the hearing.
Yes.
But what do we have from that 91 period where she was interviewed? We don't have a transcript. We have no description. I mean, I understand we have the modest application form.
Right.
But do we have anything else from that era for the IJ to base his comparison, if you will, on?
No, other than her, you know, acknowledging that she was interviewed and her explanation of what she told the interviewer, which is basically, I told him why I'm here, but no details again.
Well, with no record, she could have, if she were about trying to make it perfectly consistent, she could have said in 2002 what she could have said. I said the same thing in 91, and there'd be no contradiction for her, right? We have nothing from that.
There is no
record. So we have her coming in, you know, in 90, being interviewed later, I guess, that year.
In 91. Early 91.
We don't have any indication of the quality of that, you know, the language. And I mean, I just have a problem with that being a baseline for comparison. I understand the judge has the applicant before him, and
She also
in 2002.
Was, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
She was also interviewed in 2002. And, again, we don't have the record of the interview, but she was asked why, again, she did not bring up the allegations of abuse. This is all prior to her getting an attorney. And at that time, she said she didn't tell the person because she had her children with her. So,
well, that's, I mean, arguably, if the story is to believe, that's not wanting to go into detail about this matter in front of children has, I wouldn't say that has indicia of no.
Although the purpose of her filing an application is she wants to get into this country, and you must say something to show that something has occurred with against you that she could ask for her children
to
leave
the judge
the room.
Calls, the judge calls it vague, meager, and inconsistent.
Yes.
The inconsistency I think I've touched on with you, at least expressing my concern. Is the meager in the eyes of the IJ, as you see it, because of this earlier lack of fulsome statement? She certainly isn't meager in 2002 in describing the situation.
I believe if you read the transcript, her testimony is very meager. It lacks in details, and it's very it's not very coherent. She basically starts off with just a statement, I was raped when I was 12. Then she, with no explanation, she went and lived with her sister, and then she testified she came back 3 years later to visit her parents, and she was raped again. Again, no explanation of how any of this occurred. The testimony is very...
Not
very
sure what pornographic detail you're seeking here.
Well, this is very unlike the cases where normally someone, the case that they put into the record where, for example, a woman was married to a man for 10 years and explained the details of the abuse that she suffered at his hands, explained that she went to the police at least 5 times. The authorities did nothing about it. There were details. Details are part of how you can determine...
What country was that?
That was in Guatemala. And her testimony stands in such stark contrast. Details is just one measure.
Is that what he meant by meager?
Yes.
Did he discuss the other cases?
Her testimony basically is almost
fabulous. Did Judge Rouse discuss the other cases, say, you know, this is in contrast to other cases from Guatemala where people do complain to the police and so on?
No, he did not discuss the case. The testimony was just so uncompelling and not credible.
Okay, well, we'll have to move on. Thank you, Ms. Fallon.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you have anything more, Mr. Petty? Well, thank you very much to both counsel.